Given the central theme of this reunion dinner, it is likely to be about bragging. Let me get it started. I plan to read part of this story, then blow my referee's whistle to declare that I'm talking too long and hand the mic to somebody else. I should step aside, you're saying? Anyway, later on I will post this story online so that you can read more of it if you're interested. Also, the people who aren't here will have a crack. The online version will include links to additional documentation in case anyone would like to refute any of my claims. First, I offer a warning. Over the years, I have witnessed a number of entities identified below that have engaged in corrupt acts, either illegal or grossly unethical. I will add links below to stories in which I badmouth them, which will be handy for lawyers who are... However, those contemplating such actions should keep in mind the following facts. One, I generally tell the truth, which under U.S. law provides a strong defense against civil or criminal actions, except in cases where classified information has been disclosed. Of course, classified information has been used extensively since World War II to hide governmental corruption from the public, and I would consider it an honor to be persecuted as a whistleblower like Edward Snowden. Second, I have not held a top secret security clearance since 1965, so everything I knew then should have been just declassified, but some can play games with that. Third, I have the means to defend myself in court, and since turnabout is a fair play, potential adversaries should consider the fact that I have initiated lawsuits against a number of entities, both individual and corporate, and have won them all with handsome net profits. So, okay. Now, who am I? Most spinners probably think of me as an ancient bureaucrat, which is true, though I also did some other stuff. You may think that musician Willie Nelson is also rather old, but I view him as a youngster because he is 3 years younger than me. Let's see. Given that I am now several years past the age by which most people are dead, I believe it is time to start bragging. Incidentally, I have 5 great-grandchildren so far, and if I last another 10 years or so, I am likely to start seeing great-great-grandchildren, as my mother did. She made it past 100.
Wow.
Okay, let me say a little bit about sage corruption. As you may recall, when President Eisenhower left office, I'm not sure why that's funny. He gave a speech in which he warned about the military-industrial complex. He was being discreet in 2 ways, in that he did not identify the particular program he was talking about, and he also didn't mention the third group of participants in this corruption, namely the U.S. Congress. Before coming to Stanford, I spent a dozen years in the corrupt military-industrial congressional complex and invented a number of things, including the first computer network, which is the SAGE system, which became operational in 1958.
Wow.
the first, I also did the first cursive handwriting recognizer in the period 1959 to 62, the first spelling checker in 1961, the first search engine called Route in 1961, beginning in 1961. Later on, I initiated the development of a bunch of firsts, sometimes by accident, but generally with a lot of help from my colleagues, including the first hand-eye robotics project at Stanford, which I initiated in 1966, the first attempt at an autonomous road vehicle anywhere in the world, that was the Stanford CART in 1967, which unfortunately didn't work because of computer performance limitations at the time. I served on the startup committee for the first general purpose computer network, namely ARPANET, during 1967-68, where we foolishly neglected to include email on the first round.
And security.
I helped design the SAIL bitmap display system in 1971 to put interactive displays on everyone's desk. And then we were the first facility in the world, I believe, to do that. Including the first computer-controlled video switch, which I designed and built, an audio switch that used digital components to handle analog signals, that is, pulse width modulation instead of amplitude modulation. I designed the SAIL keyboard, which was subsequently adopted by AI groups in CN, Carnegie Mellon, and MIT, and also some corporations. Some of the features are found in keyboards of modern personal computers. In the early 1970s, with Larry Tesler, we developed the PUB document compiler, which I claim was the first to provide spreadsheets, although Larry disagrees. Along with enumeration of sections and subsections, compilation of tables with contents, keyword indexing, handling of internal and external references. However, its deficiencies in showing mathematical notation inspired John Knuth to invent the tech compiler, or whatever he calls it. In 1971, working with Ralph Gorin, we developed the first spelling corrector called Spell, which gave assistance in finding the correct spelling, unlike my original spelling checker. It soon spread around the world via the blossoming ARPANET. In 1973, when I served as local arrangements chair for the International Joint Conference on Artificial Intelligence, I put together a booklet of reviews of local restaurants from a mobile viewpoint. Working with Casey Menke, we later turned it into a restaurant review booklet called California Yum Yum. It was sold at the Sanders Bookstore. I also put it up on ARPANET as a free service for those who could access it. Eventually, Yelp turned that into a business. Also in 1973, I wrote a program called Finger to snoop on what people were doing at SAIL, but the users soon turned it upside down on me, turning it into the first social networking and blogging service, though those terms didn't come into general use until about 28 years later. In 1974, responding to a food emergency, I designed and built the world's first computer-controlled vending machine called the Prancing Pony, after the pub in Tolkien's Middle Earth. It sold for cash or credit while billing via email, occasionally giving things away and offered a gambling option, double or nothing. In 1974, with Martin Frost and John McCarthy, we developed the network news service called NS that processed incoming stories from Associated Press and New York Times newswires in real time and provided automatic notification to individuals of new stories, matching their search prescriptions, as well as allowing later retrieval.
Cool idea.
It was used by emergency response teams dealing with the Three Mile Island nuclear malfunction and the Chinese students during the Tiananmen Square protests of 1989. In 1974, I became chair of the PM happening.
Batteries, usually.
Okay. Where was I? Okay, in 1974 I became chair of the ACM Special Interest Group on Artificial Intelligence at SIGART for a couple of years. In 1975, with John McCarthy and Mark Crispin, we developed a computer networking scheme called DialNet that used switched telephone lines and modems to provide the same kinds of data and email services as ARPANET at a much lower entry cost. However, it never caught on. In 1978, after becoming editor of the U.S. Cycling Federation rulebook, I rewrote all of the bicycle racing rules for the U.S. so as to make them more compatible with international rules, and I added standardized penalties for infractions. I used the pub document compiler to maintain this annual publication until 1985, when I lost my seat on the board of directors because of my advocacy of a strong helmet rule for all races. However, the later figured out that I was right, and it was later adopted by racing organizations all around the world. And after the recreational riders saw them, they started wearing helmets too. So that turned out to be a good move. Saved thousands of lives, I claim. Anyway, in 1979, I initiated the development of a desktop publishing system using later lasers, given that Canon gave us a prototype. Louis Trompardo stepped up to that challenge and made it work using a small microprocessor, the Z9000. And we later turned that into a spin-off company, Imogen. Also in 1979, we moved sales into the newly constructed Margaret Jacks Hall, which I had helped design. I included a music room that cost a couple of $100,000 extra. And also I sort of replicated the Prancing Pony by putting the coffee room on the third floor next to the stairs and a lounge next to it so that people could meet by chance and chat. And it worked. But it was not replicated when they moved to the next building, the Gates Hall. Anyway. Where am I? Well, unfortunately, of course, the music group got abandoned up on the hill in the decaying DC power lab, and they had a rough go, but they somehow survived and are thriving today, happily. Yeah, right. Okay, let's see.
Quite nicely, thank you.
Well, when we moved to Margaret Jacks Hall, I had hoped that it would reduce tension between sales, which had most of the computer science departments, sponsored research funding and the rest of the department. However, in 1980, I learned that Sean McCarthy had a different motive for the, making that move, namely avoiding the small amount of administrative responsibility that I had been unable to protect him from. Toward that end, in 1980, he shut down sale and fired me. Maybe that's enough.